I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep us stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Rob Marshallonis. Rob is the founder of IncenseShare.com. Years of experience as CEO, engineer, entrepreneur, coach, and consultant has given Rob deep insight into employee motivation and incentives to get results. He has advised thousands of business leaders. Rob attributes many of his results as a leader to sharing strategies that multiplied sales, profits, productivity, and more. His accomplishments include 20 years as general manager and CEO of Stoner Incorporated, where he developed business strategy, built a team, and created incentive plans that resulted in 15x sales growth. Rob has innovated hundreds of ways to incentivize and share results with individuals, groups, and entire organizations. While CEO of Stoner, the company received the Malcolm Baldrige National Performance Excellence Award from the President of the United States and was named a best place to work in Pennsylvania for 9 years. When you find the right way to share your success, everyone wins. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with you.
Hey, Rob, I'm really curious, what made you decide to launch IncenseShare after years with Stoner?
Well, that's a good question, David. Over many years of my career, I've had experience and interest and experimented with and gradually developed a passion for incentive compensation plans, ways to reward employees for their incremental gains or success.
You know, it's interesting how we can develop a particular niche. Talk to me a little bit about what's involved in incentives.
I sometimes like to start with a story about this, David. And many years ago, I'm an engineer and I was a manufacturing engineer, and I had responsibility for a work group of about 15 employees. And one day, a couple leaders of that work group came to me and said, "Hey, we need to hire two more employees. We're busy. We're struggling to keep up with the work. You're making more demands of us. We're growing. And so we need to hire two more employees." And so I wasn't sure what to do with that request because I had a hunch that the work group wasn't anywhere near their potential or their capacity of output and productivity. And so I remember sort of sitting on that request from those leaders and procrastinating, buying some time, you know, encouraging them to see what else they can do. And eventually they kept pestering me and they wore me down. And I said, "Look, I'm getting very close to spending the money for two new employees," which, you know, in round numbers, I don't know, would have been about $50,000 per employee. So I was getting ready to spend about $100,000 to expand the workforce. But I came back around and I gave these leaders an option. I said, "Look, I've got an idea. We can hire two new employees and, you know, make that investment, but I'd much rather spend the money on all of you, our existing team, all of you who I know, who I trust, who I care about, rather than hiring two new people who we don't know. And that comes with some unknowns and some risk." And so I said, "Look, if you can figure out a way amongst yourselves to, you know, increase our productivity, and I'd be happy to help you with that, I'd much rather, you know, share this investment with all of you in the form of some sort of sharing plan or incentives." And of course, those leaders thought about that for a little bit and they came around and said, "We didn't know that was an option. You know, we just didn't know it was an option for us to actually benefit incrementally from figuring some of these challenges out ourselves." Their go-to approach had always been to just hire, right? When they were busy, when they were felt tapped out, their go-to approach was just to hire more employees and essentially at the same level of productivity. And so that event and that experience started something. That work group went on to more than double their output and their productivity over the course of time. It took months and a couple of years to do that, but it really gave me a good experience and turned me into an advocate and eventually passionate about this whole concept of sharing success with employees through incentives.
Now, do incentives have to be financial, or can there be other kinds of incentives?
That's a good question. And I get asked that frequently. And so they certainly do not. And, you know, in all the work I do with incentives, I really start first with low cost, no cost approaches to encourage and motivate a work group, right? So just show employees simple appreciation and respect, and, you know, start with the things that don't cost you much. But there are lots of ways to incentivize a work group. And oftentimes, the financial means of doing that, cash or bonuses, are a very universal, a very logical, consistent, universally appreciated way to do it. It's also possible to share time, which for many of us is more valuable than money. And so I guess the bottom line is there are just multiple ways that you can share your success as an organization, but oftentimes it is financial.
Yeah. Now, I know that all the studies that are published about employee engagement point to the whole idea of their supervisor or their leadership being involved in helping them succeed, both in their job and also as individuals. Is that part of what's behind the psychology of incentives?
I think that the simple psychology of incentives is just to find a way to share your success as a leader or a business owner, to find a way to share your success. And so, you know, organizational success, work group success isn't inevitable. It's not for certain. And so I think by putting some incentives in place based on the critical outcomes of the organization or of a work group, you start to make a connection, a really strong connection with employees and the work that they're doing, right? And so I think for a lot of leaders, there are many opportunities for us as a leader, right? And so one is just to be supportive and encouraging and to do all the good leadership things that we can do to help our employees and our work groups. But incentives to me are a strategy, right? They're just I believe a very logical, methodical, effective way, strategic way to reward employees, to give employees focus as to what matters most in the work they're doing. And so in some professions, it's been done for centuries, right? And it's very logical. I mean, many sales professionals are compensated in some variable way based on their results or their performance. But in many work groups, there's just no linkage to their results and to the work that people are doing. And so it's just so easy for employees to lose sight and to drift from what really matters most to the organization or to their work groups.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Rob, what kinds of mistakes do leaders make when they try to institute an incentive strategy for the first time?
Yeah, you know, there are several that I see frequently. One of the common mistakes that I see is business owners and leaders that use discretionary year-end bonus payments as with the intent to motivate or incentivize the work group. I think their intentions are good, but oftentimes those year-end after the fact discretionary rewards are not appreciated nearly as much or is not nearly as impactful as they could be if those business owners and leaders flip their thinking around to creating upfront sharing plans, right? And so, you know, there are many organizations I come across that spend tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars in the form of year-end discretionary payouts. And in my opinion, get just a fraction of the value from that they could. So, you know, it's a little bit of change of thinking for leaders to flip that around. It takes a little bit of work to understand, to identify what are the key results or the key outcomes we want to achieve from an organization, or what I advocate even more so is from a work group, and then come up with a methodical way to share a portion of those results or those outcomes with the employees.
Yeah, Rob, do you find that it makes a difference focusing on the outcomes of a work group as opposed to the outcomes of an entire organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm a big believer that incentive plans, variable compensation plans, are best designed and implemented, David, at the work group level. And that would be as opposed to for an entire organization. If when you have an incentive plan for an entire organization, oftentimes it's too distant from many of the employees who are working at a role or a task on the front lines of the business. And on the other extreme is to create individual incentive plans for every single employee would be logistically, you know, impossible or a mess. And so one of my go-to approaches is to create incentive plans by work group. And so that connects to our, you know, your previous question that, you know, if you're going to do that, then you need to identify clearly what are the key outcomes that you want from a work group. You want, you know, one set of outcomes from a sales work group, for example. You want another set of outcomes from a manufacturing team. You might want a different set of outcomes from a field service team, even different outcomes from an R&D or a research team. And so I think when you begin to look at this incentive approach at a work group level, it really starts to make more sense for a lot of organizations and more importantly, for a lot of employees.
How hard is it for an organization to try to implement an incentive strategy at the work group level on their own without outside help?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, a lot of people struggle. They certainly struggle at the organizational level because they see the disconnects and they see the complexity of having one plan for every employee. And so, you know, when you break that down, it's in some ways it may appear to be adding complexity, but I think it actually simplifies the approach when you go to the work group level. And so, you know, a lot of leaders have, you know, see the light go off when, you know, I guide them that way and we take them down that path to be thinking at a work group level. And I normally advocate that organizations start with one work group, right? I mean, pick a work group. I generally have a few favorites when we do this, but, you know, pick one work group and let's think this through and put in place some incentive plans and get something started and see how this all works. And it's just much more manageable for leaders that are, you know, that are interested in going down this path.
Yeah. So, Rob, I can see how your specialization in these incentive strategies has evolved out of your experience as someone who was a corporate leader. What was it like when you first opened up shop, and did you do this totally on your own?
Yes, good question, David. I was an engineer and then worked in sales and worked in marketing and worked at a manufacturing level. Ultimately became a general manager and CEO of a fast-growing manufacturing company. And so I did that for many years, more than 20 years. And it was just an awesome, fulfilling experience. We did some great things. I really enjoyed the people I got to know and work with and lead. And the time was just right for me to make a change about 5 years ago. And so at the time I was interested, I had some ideas and I was interested in trying some of those ideas. And so I jumped out of the corporate world and started my own business called LSP123. LSP is an acronym for Leadership Strategy and Process, LSP Leadership Strategy Process, which really were foundational elements for me as a CEO of the company that I was leading. And so I started building a business around this leadership strategy process in a coaching and consulting capacity. And I still do that. I have, you know, a handful of clients that I work with regularly, and that's awesome. One of the strategies that I felt most passionate about and had the most success with were these incentives and incentive plans. And so for me, IncentShare was something that I have built out of my LSP123 core business. And, you know, I branded it and named it and have built, you know, some branding identity around IncentShare to help build this as an entity. But, you know, the thing with IncentShare is it's much more of a niche specialized business for me. And there's just some nice advantages to that. There are a number of coaches and consultants, and I like that work, and I think I'm pretty good at it. But when I get down into the incentive space, there are much fewer people that are playing there, and yet there's still some, you know, some great needs for everyone. So I think that that was a transition for me, and I think a positive transition for me is to build out some specialty work within my LSP 123 business.
Why do you think it's important for somebody who is running a solo business as an expert to have a niche specialty like you've created?
Well, the way I have described that in the past when thinking as just as a business leader is I much prefer to develop and own and market and sell proprietary products or services. So you develop proprietary in a number of ways, but essentially how can we carve out blue ocean space that nobody is occupying and do just a great job in that space? And I would suggest to almost any entrepreneur or leader that there's almost always a way to do it, right? There's almost always some unique space, some proprietary space that you can find with products or with services that separate you from, much, if not all of your competition. And I just always felt that that was smart strategy and had used that throughout my career successfully. And so it was really a case for me to take some of my own advice and pursue that line of thinking around proprietary products or services.
Mm. Now, Rob, a lot of solopreneur experts struggle to generate consistent, stable revenue. What would you advise them for their business that may tie having this proprietary specialty or space, as you describe it, to being able to build consistent, stable revenue?
It's all about value, isn't it? And I mean, that's the key. How is it that we can provide value to clients to get doors open, to start conversations, and then never lose sight of that, the whole idea of value delivery? And so all of us, many of us who've been leaders and had responsibilities and done great work over many years, have a nice list of work we've done that's been highly value added, in many cases, somewhat unique, if not unique by itself, unique in the combination of experience or skills that we have. And so I think that's where it all starts, David. And so, in a coaching or consulting business, it's forging a relationship and trust so that we can stay engaged with those in clients in some capacity. That is, I believe, good for the client, but it's also, good for generating revenue, which is, part of the mix here. I've tended to focus on delivering value and building trust with clients, and have found that the recurring revenue tends to follow. There are a number of things, though, in addition to all that. I recently wrote a book named IncentShare, which was, a platform for the incentive work. There have been, some of the basic marketing vehicles of, website and building an email list and staying in touch with clients, lots of networking. I think all those are the seeds for, have been the seeds for me for recurring revenue.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there particular steps that you took as your business developed that helped bring in recurring revenue as opposed to transactional revenue?
I started out doing a lot of project and consulting work. And for me, that evolved slowly into more coaching work. And so maybe there's a natural evolution with that where, we tend to start off offering help in a specific way to a client. But as we build a relationship and we build some trust, then, folks get eager to stay connected because they see the value. And so I think just the simple shift from project and consulting to coaching has worked for me. Oftentimes when I do incentive work, we will start as a project to put in place an incentive plan for a work group. But as we get that established, then the role kind of changes for us as leaders. We've created a situation where employees have skin in the game and they're excited and motivated to share in the success that they create. And so it creates an opportunity for us to, for me to, stay by their side and walk along with the leaders in those work groups to help them facilitate the work group results and improvements. And so that tends to create recurring revenue.
Yeah, and I could certainly see how facilitation is a recurring revenue role as opposed to consulting, which could be time limited.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and so I think it's a bit of a mindset is what unique skills and value can and do we offer? And then how can we continue to, you know, build out those platforms and those brands? You know, for me, it was niche positioning and a book as a platform and a website to reinforce that. I have a number of, you know, online products. I've done some training. And so all of that work, as that content is created, then I find that I'm able to refine it over time while stepping and repeating and delivering it to different audiences. You know, I'm not creating something new every time I show up with a client with my incentive work. I'm able to, you know, show up with a growing and building skill set that is actually more helpful to my clients and it's more helpful to me.
Right. You know, it sounds like multiple steps of smashing plateaus.
Yeah, I believe it is. I believe it is. And so, you know, part of this is just the employee plateau. I think many employees, millions and millions and millions of employees, and this is just sort of looking at a marketplace and understanding where there's pain or problems. And millions of employees show up every day at workplaces where they're discouraged or they're distracted or they're disengaged. And the data on all of that is not good, right? And so that's not just my opinion. That's fact. And so, you know, there's a need there. And so, you know, what are the needs in the world? What are the needs in workplaces that your audience has experience, you know, working in and in problem solving? And how can you turn that into a platform to help others, perhaps starting in a coaching or consult or in a consulting or project role, but evolving that into more of an ongoing coaching role? I think the neat thing is we don't really have to create too much from scratch. We just need to dip back into our own work and our own passions. You know, for me, that's just been the best way to grow a business and increase my recurring revenue.
Great. And it sounds like it's been a great evolution.
It really has. It's been fun and exciting. And the more I think we get to pursue our passions, the more fun it is to wake up every morning and to show up, you know, with clients and deliver results and share the gains and the excitement with them. You know, it's not a complex equation, but I think we have to be a little bit deliberate for it to all fall into place.
Makes total sense. Rob, whom do you know personally who's been really successful at smashing plateaus?
Wow. You know, in thinking about that a little bit, I mean, I've had a list of historical heroes that have been inspirational to me. Personally, I think back to just a few folks in my formative years who took time to mentor me, who took time to give me leadership responsibility. I think of some coaches back when I was a younger man. I think of my parents. I think of some business associates, some business owners that trusted me early on, invested in my training, you know, gave me some rope to fail. In a lot of small businesses I work with, there's not enough support of rising young leaders, and there's maybe not enough patience with them as they learn and fail. And so I think that was really impactful on me, David, and I think it's just something we can all learn from to be on the lookout for young leaders. And I think the sooner we give young leaders a chance to, you know, take leadership roles, take on more responsibility, even though they may fail, have them fail early, you know, early and learn from that, and they will rise up, do amazing things for you and your organization as the years go on.
Rob, what can we look forward to in the near future from you?
Yeah, thanks for asking, David. As I mentioned, I've, you know, recently written a book called Incent Share. It's available on Amazon. I'm increasingly working one-to-one with business owners and leaders to help them put in place, you know, incentive plans, go through the exercise of assessing what opportunities they might have or they might find with incentive plans, especially for work groups. And so that's where I've been spending most of my time lately, and just excited about continuing that over the next few months and years.
Sounds great. How can listeners learn more about you and follow you?
Sure. Anybody who's interested in this whole incentive compensation idea, I would encourage them to check out my website, incentshare.com, incentshare.com. And I have a number of free resources there, some rich blog posts, a free download for folks who are considering incentive plans and if they're right for them. My book's available on Amazon for a few dollars. And that's where people can go to learn more.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau, sharing an important strategy for leaders to consider as they try to develop greater productivity and greater effectiveness of their workforce. My guest today has been Rob Marshallonis, founder and president of IncentShare. Thank you again, Rob, for joining us.
Thank you, David.